Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Booze Hustle, the podcast where we hear stories of people working in and around the wine and spirits industry and how they got their starts. I'm your host, Kristen, restaurant, hospitality, wine and spirit industry veteran for, 20 years. Feels like forever. I've had some great feedback from our first episode of season four, so thank you. Thank you all for reaching out. And just a reminder that if you haven't yet, please make sure you subscribe, that you rate, review the show, like anywhere you listen. And please share the podcast with your friends, okay? Stop gatekeeping cool shit. On this episode of The Booze Hustle, we talked to Seth Benheim, founder of Broken Barrel Whiskies, as well as Infused Spirits, a vodka and bitters company started very much like Microsoft in the garage of his grandmother's house in 2012. Starting at an early age, Seth was an entrepreneur, and once he found a path, he became determined to reshape the liquor industry by stepping outside of the norms and creating new and unique offerings. For example, the Broken Barrel Whiskies line utilized not only a mash bill, but an oak bill as well, a process of taking different barrel finish staves and adding them directly into a tank with whiskey for additional aging. The result is a myriad of unique, interesting flavor profiles, expressions. Today, his business has expanded, and you can find Infused Spirits and Broken Barrel Whiskies across the country. You can also hear Seth on a plethora of different podcasts, including his own from a few years back. And I really enjoyed my conversation with him. Hope you enjoy the episode. Cheers. Thank you for joining me. I'm going to just be a weirdo and repeat this because I feel like this is important for the listeners to hear. Seth just showed me his office, and there are 700,000 bottles around him, and it's wild. It's like you're in like Willy Wonka's factory, but with booze. How do you get anything done?
It is a very fun situation to spend time in here. If you are interested in alcohol or like drinking alcohol, this is a great space to be in and spend some time. It's just an awesome little selection. Not little, it's quite big.
It's a large selection. There's nothing little about what's happening around you. I actually thought you had a virtual background for a minute because it looked so like aesthetically pleasing. And I'm like, holy shit, that's real. So nice. Nope. Well done,
it's
sir.
Real. I'm one of the lucky few who doesn't need the virtual background. I've got plenty of little knickknacks to see. And, you know, we got a real lamp, a real plant, a real brick wall.
Look at you.
So it's cool.
You're like a professional. Same for me. I don't use a virtual background. The only time it's ever problematic is if I have like parent-teacher conferences, and then it's a little awkward. But you know, just like just roll with it. You know.
Yeah, I'm sure that when my kids are a little older and they've got those parent-teacher conferences, if I have to zoom in from here, it's gonna be weird because they're gonna be like, dude, why are you at a bar? And I'm like, well, no, it's my office. It's not a bar. I mean, there is, I'm actually sitting, my desk is a bar, but then also there's another, 10-foot bar in the other room. So there's multiple bars here at our office slash tasting room.
Believe it or not, teachers like to drink. I have learned this over the years. They're very interested in booze. So, you know, I don't think you have to hide it. No shame.
There you go.
So thank you for being on the show. I'm curious, have you actually ever heard this show, or is this kind of like maiden voyage for you?
Maiden voyage. We're going in eyes wide open. We're here to learn, and I'm here to learn and you know, get a sense of what you and this show is all about. And likewise,
this is not serious. This is not NPR. So,
well, I'm not like overly serious person. So I like to have a good laugh and
good.
You know, it's what, 12 o'clock here. I've got a glass of whiskey.
Look at you.
Just sitting there waiting to be, I mean, it's Friday. So
can I tell you, okay. So I wanted to be a good, good host for you and a good, you know, partner in this endeavor we're upon here. So I wanted to make sure I tasted through. It was very generous of you and your team to send me a literal box of whiskey, which just made my week. I very much appreciate. And I wanted to make sure I tasted through everything. And I really kind of like wrote down my thoughts and everything. But I got to admit, like, I started a little too early. And as the listeners are going to hear me complain about this season, unfortunately, I was sentenced to 12 weeks hardwire fucking braces as an adult, which sucks. And it was burning the shit out of my mouth.
Oh, is it? I mean, I can't say I've had alcohol and braces at the same time, but mm-hmm. is there yeah. a substantial difference? Are you noticing? Like, are flavors mm-hmm. coming through differently? I mean, I imagine braces generally will keep, like, unless you do a really good brushing before, like, there could be some savory notes or things that may, I'm not saying there's food stuck in your teeth all the time, but maybe there's even just like the flavor of the alcohol touching any kind of non-organic material and then that mm-hmm. kind of being
like a reaction
switched around. I mean, maybe mm-hmm. the alcohol like takes like a layer of the braces. I don't know.
Maybe.
But I'm sure they're made to withstand this stuff.
I could just drink it off.
You could drink until the braces have melted away.
Oh my God.
Right?
Well, so here's the thing. I think that's a very scientific explanation, Seth. Thank you. But I think it's more of the fact that just the inside of my cheeks and lips are like cut up. So it was just burning me. The alcohol was just burning me. But I very much enjoyed tasting them. And we can talk about that a little bit later. But I'm interested to hear about you first. So, you know, I love learning about the brands people work for and everything, but I'm really interested in the people behind the brand. So first, if you don't mind introducing yourself to our listeners, tell them who you are and where you're from and what you do.
Yeah, I'm Seth Benheim. I'm the founder of Broken Barrel Whiskey. I also own and manage another brand called Infused Spirits. It's a vodka and bitters company. Started in 2012. I took a leap of faith, quit my job, and went on my own to launch a vodka company and started tinkering with different infusions. It was literally called Infuse. Mm-hmm. And so it was an infused vodka company. And was tinkering in my grandmother's garage and kind of figuring things out. 2012, 2013, 2014, we kind of had product and were out in the market selling and getting distribution. And 2015, we got out of my grandma's garage for good and got an office and got an investment and got, you know, paychecks and staff and HR and legal. And mm-hmm. we had contracts and shares and all these things that did not exist for the first few years. So, and again, I was 24 at the time. So mm-hmm. 2015.
Well, yeah, I want to ask you about that because it's interesting the way you tell the story. You're like, I took a leap of faith and quit my job. Like, you were 24, man. Like, what were you? Like a stockbroker? Yeah. Were you a doctor?
Like, I took a leap of faith. No, that's the thing. I wasn't anything. And so it made taking that risk. I mean, I do talk to people that are significantly older all the time, people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and even 70s that discuss and say, well, I've thought about starting my own brand. And, you know, depending on your financial situation, the amount of time, and really, I think part of what this podcast is titled, if you've got the hustle to work it and do it and really give a substantial amount of your time, I mean, I could never start, you know, the same style or strategize the same style of company today that I did then mm-hmm. almost 12 years ago, 11 years ago, because I've got young children and I don't have
baggage.
I can't work nights. I can't be sitting there with the bar. I have rent to pay. I didn't have rent. I was living in a garage and with my parents and like kind of bouncing between the two. So I had no real expenses. I had no real debt. I have no, you know, I had no children. I wasn't married. So it made perfect sense to start And I think that goes for a lot of business in general. It's not just a liquor business or a startup or a brand or consumer packaged good company. It's really anything. So there's a lot in, I'm not saying don't be entrepreneurial, but certainly it helped that I didn't have all these drawbacks, or not that a wife or kids are drawbacks,
barriers.
But they're certainly,
yeah,
they're fighting for your time,
sure.
And deservingly so. But, you know, business really requires a lot of its founder, startup business and entrepreneurial ventures require a lot from the founders. It's not always so easy.
Yeah.
Sometimes
and
it is,
I have to say you were probably an unusual 24-year-old because, you know, there's a lot of really hardworking people I know in their early 20s, especially, man, the newer generation, younger generation coming in. They're like from a different planet. But you had to be a little bit different to really go after it that young with that, you know, level of enthusiasm, right? Because I think about when I was 24, my God, you know, I wasn't starting up anything. Maybe a car, maybe a bottle of wine. I don't know. I was not thinking about starting a business at 24. So were you always a nerd or just?
I was always entrepreneurial. I had a small business that I mean, somewhere in this office, I can show you. Actually, it's right over here. I was moving stuff around, so this is still sitting on my desk. But this is like my original business license from 2010. So I had started a small company in Arizona when I was still in college because I graduated in 2011. So 2010 was my first real business where I went down to the courthouse and got my stamp and my seal and all that stuff and created an LLC. So, you know, I had a business in college and I was doing fine with that. You know, I made money and was able to invest that money. And it was a really good push for the kind of person and the type of way I wanted to live my life. Figured that out kind of early on, like 19, 20 years old. So
what was that business?
Yeah. I did just online marketing for, you know, different folks. I got caught up in like a bunch of networking groups that would meet at like 6 a.m. and I would literally put on a full suit.
All right.
Like with suit, tie, the whole thing. And I'd show up and I'd chat with people. You know, I was 19. And there were people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s who didn't know that you could build a Facebook page for your business or didn't know that you could list. There were sections on Craigslist for painters and for auto body mechanics. And so everyone in the networking group was like a different job. It was that kind of thing. It was funny. But, you know, I would basically, none of them could sell me anything. I wasn't buying houses or getting. One time I traded ads for someone to come paint our senior year house, like paint our rooms red or something like that.
Nice.
But yeah, no, everyone was buying from me and I wasn't buying from anyone. So I was doing ads for everyone in the group and making, you know, money.
That's great. It was good. You gamed the system.
It worked in my favor for sure.
I would love to talk about Infuse a little bit. So tell the listeners for a second, just when you started the business, what is the concept behind it? Obviously, it's infused spirits, but I'm curious about like how it was differentiated from like the bigger houses that were doing something similar.
Yeah, we wanted to create a product that would be shelf stable and bring real ingredients to the fold. So rather than doing, and I wanted people to see that and understand that without being told it. And so, you know, at the time it was like Grey Goose. Yeah, this is 2012, so there were like some budding new craft vodkas that were kind of showing up with natural flavors, and you know, I think like maybe there was like Square One was a cool one.
Yep.
I think they're still around. Hansen, Hanger, there was a couple, and I saw the packaging, and it was like, yeah, infused with real lemons. Like, okay, but I'm looking at another bottle of clear vodka, so it didn't really. At the time, this has changed. I think vodka has really right sized all of its pricing, predominantly because of Tito's and other, you know, Deep Eddy. And there's kind of like these Goliaths that really set the price for what is good. And everyone else kind of has to play ball and figure out how to work their own margins on their end to make sure the consumer is not paying, you know, 50% more because it says infused. But at the time when I started, it was like $35 a bottle for Hanger and it was $22 for Grey Goose. And we all kind of took it as fact because of marketing that Grey Goose was the best vodka. And so we're going to pay this much more just because it says infused. Well, the idea was let's show people it's infused rather than have to say it at all. Now then we called the entire thing infused because it made sense and we didn't want to like have to say, oh, this is an infused vodka and make sure that that was known. We just called it infused and simply look at the bottle. There's lemon in the bottle. So it was a single bottle infusion. Mm-hmm. And we put real lemon in one bottle. We put real grapefruit in another. We did a cinnamon apple, a mango habanero, and a peach.
Did you have somebody on your team that was like in food science that could kind of, I don't know, I guess direct you into the, you know, just the science behind putting real ingredients in the bottle and keeping them shelf stable? Like, how did you manage that?
A lot of research online, did it all myself, sent everything off to food science labs to have them do oxidation studies and shelf life studies. They tested everything for its sugar content, making sure and verifying everything was gluten-free. You know, they did all of that. And so that was just me. I just did everything.
Wearing all the hats. That's what you do. Wearing all the style hats. In a garage. A basement, you know, depending on what you're doing. Where did you come across the idea for Broken Barrel?
We were diversifying Infuse in 2017. We had run, I think, as fast as we were going to run with the brand and the money we had at the time. And so we said, you know what? It's just getting really monotonous and boring to pick up the phone and say, do you want to take a meeting, Mr. Bar or Mrs. Restaurant, do you want to see our flavored vodkas? They were like, we don't need a flavor. We need a hole in the head. Like, we need another flavored vodka. But somehow the conversation was very easily sidestepped by saying, you know what? We've got a craft portfolio of spirits, which include whiskey, bitters, and vodka. Mm-hmm. They took every meeting. Every meeting was an immediate, yeah, sure, come on by. Now, did they end up buying the vodka? Tons. Like, I would say 60% of those meetings, they ended up buying the vodka that had I called and said, hey, we want to show you this vodka, mm-hmm. they would have said no. So by having
a portfolio. So the whiskey was the Trojan horse?
Yeah. The whiskey was the Trojan horse. Although the whiskey sold great. I mean, sure. we had good early on success. I think ultimately we and the market were like, okay, this is a cool idea for this whiskey that's infused. Because that was kind of the theme and the branding. Mm-hmm. But infusing was not so different from finishing, which was really picking up traction. And finished whiskeys have all but exploded in every sense. And, you know, pioneers like Angel's Envy and Maker's Mark and others have really ushered in the era of the finished whiskey, you know, mm-hmm. to the point where you get to brands now that are doing, you know, pineapple, Mexican, vanilla, chocolate, you know, finishing. It's like, is this finished or is this flavored?
Yeah, it's crossing the line. Yeah, I actually interviewed...
Blurring the line for sure.
I actually interviewed Chris Riesbeck from Barrel recently, and they've, you know, they've made their entire business model just in finished whiskeys. And I think it's really interesting how, like, the last few years are... interest level and willing to pay more for whiskey has just like grown exponentially in this category. I'm curious, actually, you know, let's take a step back here. Would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about Broken Barrel and what you guys are doing with the whiskey that's different than what everybody else is doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So the launch in 2017 was just Infused Spirits Broken Barrel Bourbon. So the main label, main logo was Infused still. And then at the bottom, it just said Broken Barrel Whiskey. By 2019, we decided, okay, we're going to call this thing Broken Barrel and take Infuse off of it entirely. And we're not even going to use the word Infuse in any single part of the label or branding or marketing. And by 2021, we had changed everything to not just not say Infuse, but to become this individual, completely separated brand with its own bottle, its own brand new set of logos, older whiskey, produced, bottled, grain to glass in Kentucky. So it completely morphed. I mean, we were sending Kentucky whiskey to Nevada for a few years prior to really, truly separating. So there were a few years there we were putting out. I think the first year it was 9-month-old whiskey. The next year it was 1-year-old whiskey. The year after that, it was 1- and 2-year-old whiskey, but it still wasn't straight bourbon. And we were growing as older whiskey became available to us. We were growing with the producer. At the time, it was OZ Tyler, which then became Green River and is, of course, now owned by Bardstown. So we were slowly but surely expanding and launching new SKUs. Like, we brought out the rye, and we brought out the cask strength bourbon, and then we brought out California oak. Then we kind of have slowly stopped making California oak and changed over to a new one called Americana, which is an American whiskey, which is awesome.
Delicious, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a good one. And the concept, to answer your question, Broken Barrel is a finished whiskey. Everything we make is finished. We use staves, not whole barrels. And we combine staves from different barrel types, whether they're new oak or used barrels that had formerly rye or bourbon or, in a lot of instances, wine, sherry, apple brandy. I mean, these are all just, we use French oak, we use American oak. And then in our limited editions, which are, you know, they're offered in black, matte black bottles. They're produced entirely by me and my team here outside of Kentucky, where we are able to monitor every single drop of the liquid. You know, we can taste it at any, we can taste it five times a day or once every 5 weeks or however often we deem necessary based on our release schedules and calendars. So we've done whiskey finished with Mezcal, Sotol, Armagnac. We've done one Amburana, won't do another one. We've done PX Sherry, we've done Port, we've done Cognac, we've done Peach Brandy, Apple Brandy, American and Calvados. We've done Mizunara.
There's quite a bit. That you guys sent me, there was quite like a range. So I'm understanding the process here. You have a finished whiskey, straight bourbon in most cases, that you are then adding the staves into. Are you doing them... If there's like a mix, for example, like you've got some that are like French oak and sherry barrels or staves, are you putting them in at the same time? Are you doing them one by one, like how all at the same time? And then they have like a secondary aging with the staves in them. Is that correct?
So it's a Kentucky straight bourbon or rye, or in the instance of Americana, it's a Indiana straight whiskey. They're aged to the age statement that we're allowed, you know, to be called straight, or especially the ones, single barrels that have age statements on them. We've done 5, 6, 7 year. From there, they're dumped into a tank, either individually or blended or batched, what have you. And then the broken barrel staves are added physically into the tank, floating around in the whiskey in tandem. So the French oak, the sherry, and the ex-bourbon staves are going in at the exact same time in the exact ratio listed on the bottle. We call this our oak bill. So every bottle will have the mash bill and the oak bill listed on the side of the label. So there's no mystery as to like what kind of staves are in this one versus that one. What batch number is it? What year was it bottled? Everything is listed on the label.
That's very cool. And how long do they stay in that tank for?
Varies. I mean, 3 months, 7 months. The longest we have is actually still going. It's a 2 year finish. Oh, cool. So it varies. Every batch is different depending on when it starts and then when it eventually comes out of the barrels. Or sorry, out of the tanks.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I wonder, as you know, because you're in this community as well, whiskey people are particular. Do you get like pushback? Do you get, or is it the opposite? Are you like embraced for being, as you refer to yourself on your LinkedIn as a heretic? Do you get embraced by these people, or do you get pushback, or like what's the response been?
Overwhelmingly positive. The response is almost typically all, that's really cool, never seen that before. Man, this tastes different. Man, this tastes good. There is always going to be the one or two outliers that are purists. You know, they want their 10-year-old Kentucky straight bourbon. They don't drink Angel's Envy or this stuff or you know, finished whiskeys. I'm not going to change those people's minds. I think the mass majority of consumers don't even know what finishing is and wouldn't have any clue or really care if you told them. So you have to play to a few different areas. You have to play to, you know, the person walking in who just happens to discover it at a liquor store in Texas, or, you know, someone who tries it at a grocery store in California or discovers it at a bar in Boston. And not one of those people might be the same person or the same, you know, have the same agenda when they're going out to discover or have something marketed to them or sold to them by someone standing in a liquor store promoting it, or an ad shows up that they didn't, you know, necessarily know, but they see the bottle. It looks, some people just, it's the right price or the right package for them and they just want to try it, or they see Kentucky on there and they go, I like Kentucky whiskey. I've never had this one. Boom. They never even turn the bottle to see that it's got French oak or sherry cask or any of that. And even if they did, they may not care.
Yeah. There's definitely a couple different camps. I know. And there's right. And there's definitely like different camps. There's the people who are like the whiskey purist people. But I feel like by and large, most people, especially like the bar community, it's like, does it taste good? Do you like it? Is it versatile? Like, is it functional? And like most people who are not in the industry, they just want something that tastes good. They're like, oh, this is delicious. Yeah. They're not like into the process so much. So I think it's very cool. I just want to say that I think the everything you guys are doing is cool. I tasted all of them today. I hadn't power tasted that many whiskeys in a row since I did my W Set 3 Spirits. And I was a little rusty.
Wow.
I was like, I'm a little rusty. But I want to talk about the different ones I tried because they were all very cool. I really liked the Americana. I feel like that I tried it last night and today. And I feel like it's just such a smooth, easy to drink, surprisingly smooth. Like you don't get the heat from it. It's 100 proof, right? And it just does not drink like 100.
Yeah, that's kind of the... initial response from most people is, why is this so easy to drink? And this is, one person called it crushable, another person called it sessionable, and another mm-hmm. person said it was refreshing. So, mm-hmm. you know, when I say people, I'm talking about like Drink Hacker and, you know, Breaking Bourbon and some of these, you know, well-established and well-recognized reviewers that mm-hmm. have their blogs or their sites that are kind of go-tos for people, at least in the industry, and maybe even others not far outside of the industry that take an interest in it.
It's definitely the more dangerous of them, because I definitely don't see the brakes pumped as easy with that one. I'm curious about the apple. So one of the staves you're using for that is apple brandy. Where are you getting the apple brandy from?
They're Laird's barrels.
Oh, okay.
So American apple brandy barrels. There aren't too many apple brandy producers, and so they're the largest.
One in Kentucky.
Yeah. Oh, there are. Yes. Yeah. We're not getting Copper and Kings barrels, I don't believe.
You know, I know them very well.
Maybe we could connect and get to know those. I've been there and I've met some folks there and I've got some of their business cards, but I've not, you know, they've done so much stuff with Bardstown Bourbon Company. We try our best to do things that haven't been done.
Sure.
And it's hard. It's a very copycat industry, and we've done stuff that other people had done before us, and we've done stuff that no one's ever done, but now people will think, oh, well, maybe I'll try that out. And, you know, I think you'll start to see more. So Toll Barrel Finishes, for example, coming out.
That was surprising.
We had, I think, one of the first ever. I think it was the first. I don't know of any other whiskeys that have released that are finished with Sotol. But we did Sotol and Honey to kind of balance. It was a kind of a fun experiment. We love that label.
Yeah, it was great. I love that one. I think that at first I didn't get so much like smoke, and then like definitely on the finish I was breathing out, I was getting that smoke. So it's delicious. Yeah, I was really excited to try that one. I was also wondering about the how's it pronounced? Huerte?
Huerte or Heart. You can call it Heart or Black Heart or Black Huerte if you're saying it. It's a Danish word.
Oh, okay. Where'd that come from?
That's the name of the liqueur we partnered with. So they're actually called Black Huerte.
Okay.
It's a product made by Laurel Canyon Spirits. They're based in LA, but they produce all of their liqueurs up in San Jose, up in Northern California. So they basically contract out this distillery up there, and it's like a takeover, and they make all their spirits a few times a year, and then they go out and sell them. But they're one of the few companies that barrel ages coffee liqueur. And we're mm-hmm. the first rye whiskey that ever finished the rye whiskey with coffee liqueur barrels. So mm-hmm. it's not a coffee flavored whiskey, which we don't do flavored anything on mm-hmm. Broken Barrel. What we do is we try to extract flavors specifically and only from oak that prior contents of whatever that flavor or note that we're looking to extract this from. It was cool because they had blood orange coffee liqueur. So mm-hmm. we did 2/3 coffee liqueur, 1/3 blood orange coffee liqueur. And literally when we broke the barrels, and probably worth mentioning, when we say break barrels, like if you go to our Instagram, which is just Broken Barrel Whiskey, you'll see videos of us, of me predominantly, smashing barrels with a sledgehammer and like obliterating them to pieces. Mm-hmm. And then we pick up those pieces and we use them. But when we broke that blood orange, the peels, the little like brown shriveled up, you know, coffee liqueur soaked peels just tumbled out. And it was such a sight to see, because normally there's just wood char in a barrel. There's usually not any whole ingredients, because we've never really done, I mean, we did Amaro, but that's not really a liqueur. We finished a single malt with Amaro casks, but this was fun. It was interesting. It was very, very different to see that.
I know this is such a basic girl question, but I make espresso martinis with reposado tequila, and every now and then with a whiskey.
Ooh.
You should try to make an espresso martini with that. I tasted it, and I literally was like, I'm going to make an espresso martini with this tonight. I'm going to let you know
It's very good. It's very good. We're trying to get, I mean, it's an expensive product because of its limited release. We only got so many of those specialty barrels. They only dump them so many times a year. And mm-hmm. we tried to use, you know, better quality whiskey, older whiskey as well. And so we are selling those. They're like $90, 90 and up. So it is an expensive espresso martini for sure. But we do have a really fancy spot here in LA. It's like in Beverly Hills, like right off of Rodeo Drive. And we showed it to them and they're like, oh, this would be a great $50 espresso martini. And in that neighborhood, in this area, like they might actually be able to sell a few of those, because there's 100%. Those, you know, richy rich people that'll walk into an establishment like that and they'll drop $50 for an espresso martini. And it's like, that's super cool. Like that.
Sprinkle
that would
some gold leaf on it.
I know. It's like, what a concept. What a concept that somebody not only was like, let's do this, and we're just going, I think that works, actually. No. Maybe they can if they can pull it off.
Seth,
power
people
to them,
do
man.
That. It's I have there's a tequila in my portfolio that is on the shelf, $179. And when we present it to restaurants and bars, every now and then we'll get somebody who'll be like, oh, we're gonna make a high end margarita with this, and it's like a $50 margarita, and they're just crushing them. I was like, okay, if you can sell a $50 margarita.
I'm probably not the customer for these kind of things. I'm super cheap when it, like, you know, I'm easy going. Some of my favorite whiskeys are like $15 bottles. You know, it's I'm not picky, and well, that's not true. I am picky, but I have good taste with beverage. But it's certainly, you know, I think there's always going to be these drop offs of quality at certain price points. And you know, you start to, every once in a while, it's like, I could have one, you know, espresso martini made with X and Y, or I could have three espresso martinis made with this, you know, standard ingredient.
I don't know, I think your heart would stop if you had three espresso martinis. Although I have been with people before
accepted.
Who have had many, many, many
challenge
espresso
accepted.
Martinis.
I think I could put away three espresso martinis.
You know what's funny? I was said to the other day that a friend of mine who very much enjoys espresso martinis, I said, espresso martinis are just the Red Bull vodka for us now that we're older.
Oh, 100% true.
So we're the same people.
I remember there was the Red Bull vodka slushies they started doing down by, like, in San Diego and different areas. They would have these frozen vodka Red Bulls. And it's like, I bet you there's, if you go now, I haven't, you know, I don't really go to a lot of bars, especially with young kids and working in a bar basically 9 to 5 every day. But I bet you there are espresso martini slushies like all over the place now, and I just haven't seen them yet. But I bet you they're there.
Oh my God. I wanted to ask, you know, it sounds like you were very entrepreneurial, did a lot of things on your own, but who would you say is like your biggest mentor in the spirits industry?
I've had several mentors along my way, and I'll probably forget some of them or to name them, but the first was Steve Lipp. He was a Scotsman who took a risk in helping me out in the very, very, very beginning when I was in the garage. Like, he came to the garage and met me there a few times, and I would meet him at his Hollywood penthouse overlooking the Hollywood sign. And yeah, I looked him up online and cold called him, explained my concept for infused vodka, and he had me over, had me meet some people that he liked, and had them vet me and the idea. And, you know, after some time, you know, a few months, I was helping him with his websites, actually, because I was pretty good on the computer, at least better than he was. So I was doing some research for him, and he was paying me a little bit to do that, because I basically, you know, he told me, I want to work with you. I don't know what we're going to do, but I want to work with you. And so I said, great. So I basically quit my job after that. And then to make ends meet in the beginning, I was working for him, and he taught me really everything I know about spirits. You know, at the time I maybe had a bottle of Wild Turkey and maybe a couple little, like, you know, flavored vodkas and some stuff, you know, this basic bar stuff. And he had this penthouse with, kid you not, $1 million of scotch. It was amazing. And so I saw that and I was like, man, I want to be like that when I grow up. And I want to have like this library of liquor. And I think probably have more bottles than he has now. His bottles are just worth, you just have to add a zero to all, literally add a zero to all of my bottles cost. And that's what he has. So he's got more dollars. I've got more volume. Mm-hmm. And more eclectic. All he has is scotch. I've got everything. So Yeah, he was the first. And then he introduced a guy named Tony, who, you know, the two of them went on to create Howlerhead. That's their mm-hmm. brand. So they launched that and brought in some other people to run it. And then that got sold to Campari, or invested into Campari, and, you know, has the UFC involved. So, you know, really, really meaningful people in the industry have mm-hmm. come to work with me. And, you know, I've got other great mentors. You know, our now current CEO, Simon Birch, is awesome. He's a good mentor. He has a newer relationship. My CFO, Chris Campbell, who came from a beer company, and just Craft Brew Alliance. Yeah, you know, amazing people, really, really smart people that have taught me a ton. My biggest and longest standing investors, one's an investment banker, the other's, you know, more of a real estate mogul, and they taught me a ton, just a ton. So everyone I work with, and everyone I just mentioned is mm-hmm. at least 20 years older than me, mm-hmm. every single one of them. So I've learned a ton from people, and I spend most of my time with people that are about 20 years older than me at a minimum, sometimes 30 years mm-hmm. older than me. So that's my world.
So people that are 20 years older than you, or babies?
Babies at home, people that are old enough to be my parents or older, grandparents even, is my day-to-day.
Let me ask you a question. Conversations. Is the plan for you, just because I can see in you the type of person who's like, on to the next thing, like ideator, you know, innovator type person, is the plan for Broken Barrel to get big enough, and especially with your new CEO, like that you have, you know, a goal of like selling it and then moving on to the next thing? Or is this like your baby, you're doing it forever, you're like all in?
I mean, the intention for Broken Barrel is for it to be a brand that is here when my kids are 21, that they could come work at the company. Like, that would be a dream, you know, for me. I don't know if my kids want to work for a whiskey company or a vodka company or even a spirits industry job, period. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But I'd be fascinated to hear kind of like how you ended up, because my parents don't drink. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody, I found my way into this industry 1,000% on my own. No one pushed me towards it. No one suggested it to me. I found it, discovered it for myself, and got into it completely, you know, 100%. I don't want to say by accident, but just, you know, on its own. It wasn't something, there was no relationship that led me here other than just from within calling and, sure. and asking and trying to, you know, experiment and explore and just getting one step further at a time. But I mean,
well, it's a good industry to make money in. I mean, it's recession proof, you know, on one hand, because like a lot of things can be falling apart and this business still thrives. And people in this industry make, I think, a disproportionate amount of money, maybe not on the distillery winery side, but like in that middle tier section, there's a lot of money being made. You know, I've worked in supply and distribution now for 11 years, almost 12 years.
Yeah.
And I came to this industry out of necessity. Like a lot of people that work in the restaurant industry, like I had no money and I was on my own. And I started working in a restaurant when I was, I started working in a pizza place when I was 13, and then restaurants, and then bartending, and then managing restaurants, and, you know, really just out of necessity, because I had no safety net anywhere. So, you know, and then you learn a lot about wine and spirits. I mean, there are people who don't learn anything about wine and spirits that bartend. Like, I don't know how, but they manage it, which is also quite amazing. But I absorbed so much. And eventually, like, you know, like I'm sure you understand this now, you can't do late nights with small children anymore. And I didn't want to be well into my 30s and 40s and like not have weekends off. So, you know, I just did the transition into the wine and spirit supply distribution side, just as a way of like taking the knowledge and applying it somewhere else. I will say it's very different than, it does feel disconnected sometimes from the brands themselves, because they become brands and you forget that there's people attached to these brands, which is why always, I very much enjoy talking to you and people like you, because I definitely am very aware that there's a person behind a label and there's someone's hard work behind a label, and it's not just, you know, a product with GP, you know?
Yep.
So
exactly.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people do a lot of people do find their way into this from working retail or working restaurant, and they, you know, they see the person coming in and go, oh, like, it's nice you get off at 5 or 6, you know, when you're done selling, because we're done buying. So you're not, you know, you get to go home and see your family. And so the supply side from a distro or brand rep or, you know, the suppliers themselves and those companies and all the jobs that exist within, you know, people forget, like, oh, I could go through it, you know, through chemistry and science. I can get there through sales. I can get there through operations and logistics and, you know, there's different jobs throughout. So it's kind of cool to see how people find their way into the industry. But I think yours is probably a little more of a traditional track where, like, I never bartended. I never worked in a restaurant, not a day in my life. I would like to have had, just to have more experience in that. But I just kind of, like, went head first and started so young and early on that, like, it really, there wasn't, I guess I could have bartended in the last year of college or year after college in theory, but that was really it. That would have been the time.
I could have spent, like, less time bartending and more time building a business, and I'd be in a much better position right now. So, like, a lot of important skills are learned behind a bar, but I probably could have spent a little less time doing it. I kind of got stuck there. It's hard not to. There's a lifestyle attached to it as well. And
yeah.
You know, the bar people will tell you, like, bar community is your family. It's very different than other jobs where you kind of check in and you check out. And a bar is like the whole world. That is your entire ecosystem. Those people there are like, they become your family because you spend so many hours with them. It's like, so it's definitely a world you can get sucked into for sure. I'm curious to hear a little bit about your distribution model currently and like where you are and how you're managing that.
We are in 40 states and Canada. And,
oh, cool.
You know, the states extend from Florida all the way to Alaska, to Washington, California, New York, New Hampshire. You know, we have product in a lot of places. New Hampshire state stores. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
And sorry, where are you based out of?
I live in Connecticut. So I cover, for my job, I cover all of the Northeast. I manage our fine wine craft spirits portfolio.
The thing is, I have such an interest in just what everyone is doing, not just what I'm doing. I'm generally intrigued and, you know, by these conversations and by sitting down with other people in the industry and talking to them and understanding what makes their product different or how they make it or, you know, what inspired them. And all that stuff is deeply interesting to me as well. So I love, you know, the two-way conversation.
Hey, you should listen to my podcast. That's literally all I do.
I will. I'd love to go back. And what I do is I try to like go back, find the episode I was on of a certain podcast, and then I'll start going to the one before it or the one after
right,
it. Or kind of like
right.
I start with mine and then I go back up and down. And in full transparency, I've been on
a bajillion. I saw it on your website.
A few podcasts, not to mention. So we did 50 episodes of a podcast. It was an interesting little entrepreneurial thing because I met this guy, was on his podcast. We really hit it off. I was like, dude, you're really good at this. He's like, yeah. And I'm like, I wanted to start a podcast. He goes, no way. I go, yeah. And he goes, well, I used to work in booze. I said, really? He goes, yeah, I was a brewer at Golden Road Brewery in LA. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, that's awesome. And so he knew a lot more than he let on about just he had a great palate. He really understood spirits. And we had for the most part, we had a pretty aligned sense of things. And then I had obviously a lot of connections and knew how to get in touch with all kinds of brands and distillers and people I'd met over the years that at that point, which is even more now. And we started this little podcast. And after 9 episodes, we took it to these online companies and pitted a few of them against each other to buy it from us. Because everything I do ends up becoming some kind of a deal or a business or a venture. So we sold it to one of these groups and we reskinned the first 9 episodes to be this new name. Like we chopped out all the mentions of what we were calling ourselves originally to the new name. And then we did another 41 episodes, but it ended up becoming way too much video and way too much like hawking, you know, over the price bottles on this guy's platform. I was like, you know what? And as we were building Broken Barrel out, I got really scared of it being this thing where I would be seen as the face of someone trying to push $500 bottles of Blanton. And I was like, that is the last thing I want to be known for or be seen doing. So we very quickly said, you know what? We said, look, we only want to do podcasts. That's it. We want to stick to the agreement. He's like, we need video. We need all this other stuff. I said, not going to do it. So we parted ways and that was it.
Smart.
But it was,
it
worked out. It was a good experience overall. I loved the people I got to interview. I think the podcasts themselves, I'd say about half of them are really good. Like they're just, there's really good meat in there that you learn a lot because there were some really interesting guests who, like you said, like Barrel Craft Spirits that we spoke with someone. He's not there anymore, but he was really knowledgeable. And I always remember that episode being really informative to me, even as a brand owner who knows a lot about this stuff, that he was very, very smart and very knowledgeable about the industry. And the bartenders we interviewed had some, two of our bartender episodes were arguably our best. One was with a guy on Mezcal and another was with about rum. And we actually had the head chef from Lost Spirits on and it was awesome. Just really, cool content that we got to create and be a part of. So,
all right, I'm gonna come visit you next time I'm in LA.
Yeah.
You guys have a tasting room or what?
Yeah, just a tiny little tasting room with like 2,000 bottles of booze.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll come with a full stomach and I won't have braces on and then I'll be able to enjoy more alcohol without burning the shit out of my mouth. But you're a delight. I really enjoy talking to you. Obviously, it's easy to talk to you because you've been on 975,000 podcasts. I'm sure this one's your favorite.
It's by far the best. Number one.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.